I don't even know what kind of music that is, but hey, thanks.
It's prong, actually.
Prong. Ah, yeah. Excellent. Oh, do you know, I actually had a question in my email. I'm going to have to forward it to you. There's a show that a listener from way back, that a listener couldn't identify the songs. So I'm going to send you the, you will, I'm going to send you that email so that you can figure out what songs those were, because I know I would never know. Because it's okay. Not like Depeche Mode and ABBA or anything, so I would have absolutely
Blondie.
No clue. Blondie, yeah. So I would have absolutely no clue. So unless you know, because I hardly ever do the breaks, and when I do, I get yelled at. So anyway, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Will,
and of course Scott L. and Karma are out of the studio for the remainder of the evening. We are very fortunate to have our guest Vance West from Trinity Science International on the show. We're talking about the upcoming Open Remote Viewing Project number 2, co-sponsored by Trinity Science International and Ghostly Talk. While we're on the air live from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday night, you can always go in the chat room. The chat rooms are at pioneer.rolo.net. And you go in there, click on the text chat link that's in the little control gizmo down at the bottom, text chat link. And if you're running Java, you should be able to log right in and chat with all the cool people that are in the chat rooms. There's, well, lots of them today. Hi, Devin. Hi, Kelly. Hi, Scott K. Oh, Vance is in the chat room, too, even though he's on the phone. Ghost Hunter from England. Coconut Monkey. Donnie. Alfie. ABA 9232.
ABBA.
That's ABBA.
We'll take an ABBA.
Ah, cool. And, of course, Will and myself. So, and Phobos is on vacation, so that's a roster. I mean, they're in there, they're chatting all the time, they're talking about this stuff, and they are asking questions, Vance. They want to know.
Oh, are they?
They want to know, when do you think we're going to start this? And I understood we were organizing now, and that it would be, you know, we'd actually start in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, that sounds, you know, not a problem there. It's, I mean, from the last one, we basically had this foundation set up so we know how we're going to do it and how everything is going to play out. So now it's just a matter of getting the websites and any broadcast times that we need to do aired out. But we'll need to next couple weeks, not a problem.
Excellent. Well, that's what I was thinking, because we've got a lot of the stuff now. Trinity Science International has been doing a lot of stuff. 2005, you'd said in the first segment that it's going to be a banner year. It's all set up to be a banner year. That's because you're taking on a lot of upcoming stuff. Tell me about some of the things you'll be doing in 2005 that'll make it a lot different than 2004 and before.
Yeah, 2005 is really when I'm, you know, all these years in the past, Trinity Science International, that's been a vision that I've had since the early 90s, and I've been, you know, laying down this groundwork of what I envision TSI to be. And it's there's two parts of TSI, essentially, Trinity Science. There's a part where we teach a lot of unique skills, one, of course, being remote viewing, but the other being some of these martial and mind sciences that I'm involved with for the past 15 years, and I teach those. A lot of earth skills on how to actually become better integrated and for lack of better term, a steward of the earth. But I teach a lot of earth skills on how to actually survive in conjunction with earth in a very natural way, a lot of outdoor skills, a lot of unique training and experience that I'm coming from, I'm now offering to the public. And 2005 is where I'm really pushing this out to the public. I've gotten to a point where I have a lot of the documentation and curriculums kind of, you know, semi-ironed out, where I'm comfortable now, ready to go public with it. So that's one part of TSI, is this offering of training and all these unique experiences that we're going to start offering. The other part is we don't just train. We don't just teach what we teach. We're actually actively doing it. And that's what probably is a big difference between what we do here at TSI and some other just strictly training places. We're actively doing what we teach also. I still do a lot of work with different agencies, whether it's remote viewing contracting or teaching of defensive tactics and close quarters combat. I'm still out there actively doing stuff, you know, so we're getting more involved, and it's a duality, really. We train, but we also do what we train in, and that's probably a big difference. But 2005, very, very busy. What we're doing is, on a remote viewing front, we're finally going to start offering these three-day intensive remote viewing workshops. Now, people that are familiar with remote viewing and some of the different methodologies of remote viewing, whether it's controlled remote viewing or technical remote viewing or scientific remote viewing, these are all different methodologies that are based on something that's come from the military, the original CRV methods. Now, what I'm teaching is I'm calling OpenRV. Now, a lot of people have been getting a lot of emails the last couple of months about, you know, what exactly is OpenRV? Are you introducing a new methodology or a new technique into remote viewing? And the answer basically is absolutely not. It's not a new methodology, although I thought about calling it SUV just for sake of coming up with a neat acronym, you know, maybe Super Ultimate Viewing or something. But seriously, OpenRV is something that, going along with our Open Remote Viewing project and my love of being open and contributing back to the community, this is what OpenRV is. But the basis of OpenRV is essentially just the basics of remote viewing that's come out of the military and all these scientific labs. That's where there's nothing, new, so to speak, but we are open. We are contributing back. No one has all the answers, so we're constantly pushing the envelope and coming up with new techniques to solve some of the limitations of remote viewing. But as we explore, we also introduce those back into the community. But 2005, like I say, we're going to be introducing these three-day workshops. We'll start down here in Florida and travel up to Georgia, and then we'll kind of expand out there as we go along. But, it's going to be a very, very busy year.
Excellent, and I'm very glad to hear it because it takes things like that. Oh, another Diet Pepsi being cracked. Excellent. it takes institutions like yours, organizations like yours, like Trinity Science International, and to be open like that in order to advance anything. For example, the latest hot topic around here has been instrumental transcommunication,
right?
ITC. And we had the fellow on from World ITC, and really opened our eyes, because back in, the 70s or 80s, the 80s, there was a group called Spiricom. Well, they were called something else, but they invented this thing called Spiricom, and it was an instrument. It was a machine. It was a radio transmitter / receiver gizmo in a Faraday cage, and they were able to get these entire conversations from a fellow who claimed that he had been deceased, that he was deceased. And they learned enough about him through these communications that they went and found out that indeed he was a deceased doctor and amateur radio operator, which on the other side, that interested him in the project, the Spiricom project. So that data is out there, and it is available, but it's not like really huge. Nobody made a big deal of it. So what happens is it was sort of under the carpet, and I believe it was the Halloween show on Coast to Coast that got Scott interested in it. He did some digging and found World ITC, and they found all this stuff from the 80s, right?
Right.
A lot has been done. A lot is out there. It just needs to be, you know, brought to people's attention. But with this project, ORV, and with what Trinity Science is doing, you are already web-enabled, email-enabled. You're in the communications age.
Right, absolutely. And it helps tremendously because now, you know, we have all those unique tools at our fingertips where, you know, we're a global community now. Everyone is within, you know, touch of everybody now, and it's a fantastic, fantastic tool, and it only helps in driving these community-based projects, and it's going to be, you know, it just blossoms as we go along. But the openness is where I'm at. I'm a huge fan of open source software, and I really, you know, am adamantly behind that philosophy of people working together, putting out their ideas, putting it out to the community, and saying, look, here's what we got here. Check it out. And, if you have any better ideas or something different, you know, get involved, and let's go from there and see what happens. And that's my idea of remote viewing. We have a very, very solid foundation, one that was, incredibly thoroughly researched in the military for, two to three decades. And that's the foundation we're coming from. So we have a guidepost. And now, it's been released out to the public, and so many people are involved in remote viewing now and doing some amazing, amazing things and taking it in different areas. And, that's the openness of it, but I would like to see more people working with each other to do that, because there's so many people that have just amazing, I see remote viewing data sessions from people that are not, quote, trained remote viewers, but they have maybe, a more natural gift, and they're shown a couple techniques and just amazing work, but they come up with maybe a unique approach to extract a specific piece of data that would otherwise be very, very troublesome. And it opens the floodgates to, wow, hey, maybe there's something here where we can expand and come up with a standardized technique to be able to teach people to do something. And that's, some of the work that's been laid with numbers, and then, of course, the location problem that's so prevalent with remote viewing. It's so hard to deal with locations, whether it's missing persons or things of that nature. But that's the openness of it, and that's the part that I enjoy and look forward to getting people more involved. And as we discussed on the break, one thing I want to do with this second project that we're doing is, once we get the the session work and the data and the people that participate, I want to, there's people that they want to get involved more with remote viewing training, and remote viewing training is, quite honestly, it's expensive. I mean, I've spent, thousands and thousands of dollars over the years training with my instructors. It's a very expensive endeavor to get the training. And now with the internet, it's a lot more accessible. You can get training via online curriculums and DVD courses that are very, very good. But of course, those are, always secondary to getting personal instruction from a competent instructor. So what I want to do with this project that we're doing is offer that, what we'll do is we'll set up a kind of a, again, we're going to do this anonymously, so you don't have to worry about being pressured, but the individual that has the best judged session or the best judged data that they send in, I'm going to offer them the invitation to come to one of our newer OpenRV 3-day workshops on me. I'm giving them an open invitation. They don't have to worry about tuition. The only thing they have to do is worry about getting their transportation to the site, and I'll take care of their tuition fees for the actual training. And that's my basic way of saying thank you for submitting and maybe getting a couple people that are really interested in remote viewing and getting them the training.
Oh, that's extremely exciting, because it is expensive. We know that because we hear it all the time on Coast to Coast, and we see it on the web. To get ORV train or to get RV remote viewing training, it's an expensive and time consuming endeavor. And if you have some good results and show a bit of an aptitude, you're saying why not reward somebody for that? So if you choose to do this, not anonymously, because you always have the option of writing anonymous, on the name line, but if you want to put in your actual name, which of course will be kept confidential, completely confidential, you could actually receive an invitation to go train with Vance West, right?
Absolutely. We're gonna open it up. So whoever has that top session, we'll kind of set up a control, whether we make it, within the management here, of Ghostly Talk, whoever decides on what the best judge session is, or maybe we can open it up to a voting to the public. I'm not sure how we'll set that up. But whoever has the best judge session will receive an invitation to come to one of our 3-day intensive seminars and the foundations of remote viewing on me. And like I say, the only thing you need to worry about is your transportation to the site, and then that's it. We'll take care of getting you trained in the 3 days of training. And like I say, 2005, it's a very busy year for us, and I look forward to meeting a lot of new people and talking about remote viewing. And it's our way of saying thanks and giving back to the community. So
That's amazing. I absolutely love that idea, Vance.
I think it's a really, you know, fantastic way to kick this off and kick off the new year and kick it off with Ghostly Talk. I think it's an excellent way to say thanks to everybody and reward people. Because like I say, these sessions that we got on that first ORVP was just amazing. And you look at some of those sessions and, you know, these people, give them 3 days of training and you're going to start developing some really world-class remote viewers. I mean, that's amazing stuff.
Yeah, because I'm thinking back to the, you know, ORVP1, and it would have been very difficult to actually pick the best one. Some of them had some elements, you know, absolutely dead on, and others had other elements dead on. That was a very successful project. And so I'm hoping that with, you know, if we get, you know, as good of participation or even more participation, that we'll have our work cut out for us deciding who's gonna judge the best one out of all of them.
And that's going to be a very, very difficult thing to do because, like you say, there's usually you'll see little bits and pieces in almost everyone's session work that is good data. So it really becomes a chore to pick, you know, the best one. And, you know, it's not to say that, you know, the one session that does get picked as the best, it's not to say that, you know, it was the absolute best, but maybe there was something in there that was really, really shown through, but we'll have to establish some sort of judging scenario or protocol to be able to pick something, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we can only do one. I mean, I'd like to be able to give, you know, something to everyone, but of course that, you know, becomes a bit impossible, but yeah, it's our way of saying, hey, great job, thanks, and, you know, we support your, you know, what you're trying to do, and hopefully, you know, hey, we'll get you some training and maybe continue on, because that's really the bottom line, is getting more people involved in not just remote viewing, because remote viewing is just one little tool in the bigger picture, but it's a step, and people that are inclined to get involved in remote viewing, this is a way that they can, you know, possibly get involved more.
When where do you hang out? I already know the answer, but where do you hang out? What boards do you read? That kind of thing.
Well, most of them, of course, you know, there's 10,000roads.com, which is a remote viewing bulletin board ran by PJ, which she has an amazing background with, you know, a lot of these gurus of you know, remote viewing, Joe McMonagle and Paul Smith, and so she runs a site, 10,000roads.com, and it's linked from my website, and she actually has an amazing bulletin board there, a forum where you can actually, you know, talk with other remote viewers and talk about experiences and training and techniques, but she also offers an ability within the website there to actually get blind targets or targets that you're have no information about and do remote viewing, and it's a fantastic resource. And, you know, I'd say it's linked from my site, but that's, you know, that's one site that I frequent quite often. You know, I'm all over the place. You know, I try to keep abreast on, you know, whatever's going on in the remote viewing community, whether it's, you know, my instructors that I train with. You know, there's I was talking to Scott on email about this. There's a Paul Smith, which is one of the, you know, ex-military remote viewers, one of the pioneers that were in this Stargate program, has just put out a book. It's on the shelves now. It's called Reading the Enemy's Mind. And on my website, there's a link to his site. And it's a fantastic, fantastic voyage into the remote viewing program as it was in the military, how it came about, a lot of the characters involved and the different viewers involved. And it has a really fantastic timeline of events of how things went down and why and his perspective on, you know, what was going on. An amazing, amazing book. So there's lots of resources out there, but I kind of visit, you know, whatever I can, and I I don't limit myself to just remote viewing. Like I say, I'm involved in so many different types of training that I spend a lot of time on some of these martial arts sites, and I'm a big a supporter of one of my teachers, Tom Brown Jr., an amazing teacher of tracker skills up in New Jersey and now down in Florida. You know, I'm involved quite a bit with that type of training and those forums and bulletin boards. So I, I get around, you know, quite a bit, you know, and visit all the different things and try to stay abreast of all the different types of training.
Well, then I know when I go on my Bigfoot hunt, I have to bring you then.
Yeah, we can maybe track that and get some prints or something. But,
because I want.
Yeah, that would be something interesting. You know, down in here in Florida, we have the skunk ape.
Yes.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, every couple times a year there'll be a, you know, an amazing sighting or something or some type of footage of the skunk ape, and you know, it'd be really interesting. You know, I wish I had more time to pursue different types of experiences, because that would be a real interesting thing to be able to, you know, take a week or so and go out to some of these places and really you know, search for something like that. Take a team of people that have different backgrounds, people that are, you know, experienced in ghost hunting and have that type of electronic background to do EVP and video, and then have some trained remote viewers and have some trained trackers. And, you know, just have this amazing team of individuals and do whatever. I mean, that's really, you know, one of my things with Trinity Science is, you know, I'm meeting and training and working with all these unique individuals, and you know, that's you know, as I'm offering these workshops to the public, and you know, of course, you know, you're going to take the criticism of, oh, well, you're offering this remote viewing training for money, you're selling out, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the bottom line is, you know, yes, you know, we're offering public training for profit. We're making money, but with what we're doing with our training is I'm trying to make it accessible to people enough that they can get the training. But what I'm doing with the funds that I receive from the training, I'm putting it back into what we do at TSI, and enables us to take the monies that we get from training and funnel it into some of the field work that we need to do. Because the problem with remote viewing is, say we take on some type of project that requires, you know, anything where you're trying to solve something typically requires field work. You know, all this data is great, but unless you can actually act upon it and get to a site and really, you know, get your nose in the dirt, it's pointless. It means nothing. And that takes time, and it takes money to do that. So the funds that we get from this training, it's being funneled right back into the field work where we can get back out there and actually take our data and do something with it, because that's really where, you know, we run into a brick wall sometimes with remote viewing is we get lots of neat data, but no one will act upon it. And that's the, you know, something that hopefully we can remedy.
Oh, I'm all for that. I mean, because even with, like, Ghostly Talk, which is, we fund Ghostly Talk completely out of our pockets. It's our hobby.
Right.
As you know. And so it's funded out of our pockets. There's been some folks who've donated stuff and things, like we got the board because of a generous donation from Scott Kay in Indiana. And, you know, we've gotten microphones and stuff because people have sent $20 here, $20 there, that kind of thing. And it's very, that kind of encouragement is extremely helpful to us, to Ghostly Talk. But when you're doing an endeavor like yours, you're a whole nother scale up. So I can see where having a product, something, or in this case a service, where you can train folks and, you know, one-on-one, because that's really what they would be paying for, is the one-on-one experience. Because the information, like you said, you're releasing. The actual
Absolutely.
Information
yeah.
is there.
I mean, remote viewing, you know, there's plenty of remote viewing documentation, you know, out in the wild now, and you can get quite a bit of understanding from a lot of the documentation, but it's still, you know, like anything, it's still not a, you know, it doesn't take place of having an instructor or someone to guide you in some of the nuances and tips and tricks. So it's really necessary to have that guidance.
Right. So the one-on-one experience is going to be, like, extremely valuable for anybody wishing to pursue that. I have a question, though.
Sure.
Could you remote view Bigfoot or colonies of Bigfoots?
Well, you know, that would be a real interesting thing. And the thing with remote viewing is, you know, wow, something like that is, you're working under the assumption that it exists. Now, you could do what we call a topical search, so to speak, where you search under a collective name that something is known as, Bigfoot or, you know, a Sasquatch. You know, that's something that's well known enough that if you do a topical search for Bigfoot, you know, the collective, or, you know, what is referred to in remote viewing as the Matrix, understands what you mean when you say Bigfoot or Sasquatch. But the problem becomes, well, the data may be inconsistent because, well, what if it doesn't exist? What if Bigfoot just simply does not exist? And you do a remote viewing session and you get really bizarre data, you know, it would be very, very hard to analyze. You know, remote viewing excels at working on things that have validation or ground truth known about them that you need more info on. When you start working on things that can't absolutely be validated, it gets into really, really tricky waters because you can't go check it out, you know, unless it's something that you really get some concrete data on that leads you to something where you can go validate. But that would be an interesting project.
From what I gather then, okay, and I already know this. I've talked with you about this stuff, but I just want to make it clear, you know, and I want to ask these simple. They're not simple. These are very difficult questions. But we don't know whether this concept of a Bigfoot. Well, we know the concept of a Bigfoot exists, but we don't know that Bigfoot itself exists yet.
Right.
So we do know that we have, for example, a film. A very famous film. Do you remember who shot that? Do you remember the guy's name?
Oh, God.
And then he passed away.
Didn't he on his deathbed say that he faked it
something? Yeah, he said he faked it, his kids or something said he faked it. But anyway, we have this film. And it's a famous film, and I know you've seen it. Everybody on the planet, everybody who listens to Ghostly Talk, I'm sure, has seen it. Of a female Bigfoot walking across an open or a field in the woods. And they had taken this film of this female Bigfoot walking, you know, I think from left to right in the screen, and in the shot, and of course there's wild speculation. No, and even the family of the fellow said
it's
that
the Patterson film.
The Patterson film. That's it. Thank you. Is it chat room or your?
No, I
Google.
I looked it up.
Thank you, Google. And so what happens is the Patterson film shows this Bigfoot. Okay. Could you know that you don't know if Bigfoot exists, okay, but you know the film exists, and you know it had to have been made somewhere at some time, right?
Right.
Could you then say, because one of the things you had said was you can view an event. Could you remote view, and of course this would be either something that you would do if you were a remote viewer, like on your own. It wouldn't be like a project unless, PJ made it a blind target or something, but... the event of the manufacture of that film, would that, and then what if it really was in the middle of the woods with a Bigfoot walking across, you know, that kind of thing. Would that help the Bigfoot?
That would be a real interesting tasking and a real interesting project. In a way, if I understand you correctly, the way you would have to do that is you would have to target the event of that individual filming the event. And what would happen is, as a remote viewer and as a project, you would have to set it up in such a way that a remote viewer is actually viewing the event of the filming, but then would have to go a step beyond that and actually go before the event to see what happened before the event. Was there an individual putting on some sort of costume, you know, at this event before the actual filming? Things of that nature, and that's... Could it be done? Sure, absolutely. Is it easy? Absolutely not. That would be very, very advanced for remote viewing to be able to task an event like that and then have a remote viewer with advanced enough skills to be able to move around on an event in time to get that data that you're trying to get. And it would be a very, very, very advanced project. Could it be done? Yeah, absolutely. And that would be actually very interesting undertaking.
Why not remote view like Lee Harvey Oswald the day of the Kennedy assassination or remote view like the grassy knoll on that day?
That has to have been done. It's
been done, you know, several times, and actually there was a group of remote viewers that, you know, I was very very honored, very privileged to work with the last several months here, and one of the taskings was that event. And very, very interesting data. The problem comes into, and this has always been the quagmire of remote viewing, is things of that nature. You know, for example, that specific event, you can get some real interesting data, but how do you validate what you may get if it points to something that is contrary to what's been released? There's no way to validate it, and so it becomes speculation. And it's very interesting, but at the same time, a lot of times it actually opens up more questions than it offers answers, because you have no way of going back and really verifying the ground truth. You know, it's kind of similar to the project that we did, one of the last shows where we actually targeted with blind remote viewers this character of Jesus of Nazareth. A very, very interesting project, very controversial it turned out to be, very interesting data, but the bottom line is totally, you know, speculative in nature, because there's no way for us to actually verify or validate any of the data that we have gotten. So that's really, you know, the problem with taking on things of that nature is, how do you validate?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is tough. I understand, because you want the validation, but is that just you? Like, are there others who could perhaps say, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm never going to be able to know this for a fact, but I just want to do this exercise just to know that I did this exercise and I came up with whatever data I came up with, just to have the exercise be done?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I mean, there's, you know, and I do projects like that myself, you know, or sometimes I do it with, you know, as a group with other remote viewers, and they're fun. They're fantastic, and they're really insightful sometimes, you know, and they lead you to other types of research or whatever of personal nature. But the bottom line is, when it comes to the science of remote viewing, the nuts and bolts and the you know, the controls that need to be put out into the community to get it accepted as a validated science, that's where, you know, the main part of the diet has to be validated work, where people can, you know, do remote viewing work in blind or double blind scenarios and then go back and get the validation and ground truth. But these interesting or esoteric or speculative type projects, oh yeah, they're really fun, they're really fantastic. Everyone that's involved in remote viewing should do, you know, targets like that at some point. It just, you can't make it your sole remote viewing diet, however. You have to stay grounded. But yeah, I, you know, absolutely I do those. I don't release a lot of those only because, it, you know,
they're more personal. They're more something you're interested in or whatever, and it's not really advancing the science. It's just for your own
just your own information, and, you know, that's an aspect of remote viewing that, you know, everyone should get involved with. I mean, you know, honestly, when you to get involved in remote viewing, and you have this tool where, you know, essentially you can know many things about, you know, all types of anything you want, you know, whether it's past, present, or future, you can't help but do some of these. And you can't just do validation training all the time. That's really boring, you know, honestly. to do training sessions 100% of the time where, you know, you're targeted against a, you know, person, place, or event, or, you know, some type of training picture to, you know, just learn or, you know, sharpen your skills, you know, it gets boring. You know, you have to have little side projects to do interesting stuff, whether it's looking for buried treasures or, you know, targeting, you know, past events or historical picture, historical figures. You have to do stuff like that to keep your interest, and that's part of remote viewing. But as far as the science, yeah, you got to stay grounded, absolutely. But yeah, those things absolutely can be taken on.
One more unscientific thing I'll throw at you that would be just more like a hobby or an interest of folks, and then I'll let that subject drop, because I know
I have one more too.
Oh well, I have one more: the afterlife.
Oh, you know, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. One of the you know, probably the biggest remote viewing training organization or company, SciTech, actually has a, I'm not sure what they call it, whether it's a video or a, you know, some type of, I think it's a downloadable video that you can buy from their site. But what they've done is they targeted a whole mess of blind remote viewers on this idea of the afterlife and what happens after you die. Really, I haven't seen it myself. They have a little trailer on their site, but I would bet that would be very, very interesting. And that's, you know, one of data, but what do you do with it?
Well, I agree. I understand the scientist in you, the remote viewer, you know, the scientific remote viewer in you wanting always to know, you know, I want that confirmation kind of thing. But at the same time, I'm also guided by my thirst for knowledge, my you know, I want to be on a quest for something probably unattainable. And it would just be interesting to me just to add to my repertoire of knowledge that somebody had done this task and what the results were. So I'll tell you what, if anybody listening wants to actually get that video for Ghostly Talk, I invite you to do so, because that would help a lot.
I would love to see it myself, actually. I mean, the trailers they have looks very fascinating, and like I say, I'm sure it's amazing data, and I know, you know, the people that work with me and you know, share remote viewing projects, you know, I'm known as the, you know, anal retentive, you know, guy when it comes to, you know, validation, and only because it's very critical in remote viewing as far as it becoming an accepted thing that the bulk of the data being put out is on validated scientific ground truth type things that can be, you know, looked at and say, oh, okay, well, this is, you know, some pretty amazing documentation. Plus, as far as learning remote viewing, it is, you know, very, very critical that when you're learning to remote view, that you constantly get feedback. You got to have feedback on things that can be validated and that have ground truths known about them. Otherwise, it's just like in school when you're learning anything. You got to have that constant feedback of good, bad. So if you do a lot of, in the beginning stages of learning these fundamentals of remote viewing, if you do a lot of these esoteric or non-validation type targets, you don't have that feedback because you can't get feedback on something that just you're not able to get feedback on. So it's very critical as far as, you know, learning remote viewing that you stay very grounded and have a very the majority of your targeting is validated type material.
I agree with that assertion. When you're learning it and you're trying to, you know, perfect your skill or you know, at least get good at it. I don't know if you can be perfect yet, which is what you guys are doing, trying to come up with protocols and techniques and things like that to make it attainable for everybody. But the while you're first starting out, you wouldn't want to go, like, you wouldn't, if you're learning English, you wouldn't want to start out writing sonnets, for example.
Right, yeah.
So it's the same thing. You don't want to start out with the esoteric and things like that. You want to start out with validatable targets so that you get the feedback and you can get as good as you can get on it.
Right.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you for stating that, and that's a really good point. But
right.
Whenever I hear about remote viewing, I always think of these just fantastical things, just myself. But that might be me personally. I don't know.
Yeah, and you have to keep it fun. You have to make it fun for yourself also, and that's why, you know, people and why we do take on these projects. You know, hey, let's you know, actually one of the one of the recent projects that I worked on just as a side project was this idea of Stonehenge.
Hmm. Interesting.
Oh, and the tasking was, you know, basically I tasked, you know, a bunch of remote viewers, just again like we're talking about a personal interest of what was the intent upon the people or, you know, the actual creation of Stonehenge, what was the intent or purpose behind it when it was originally created. And it was a very, very interesting data that we got. And, you know, if you look at it, I'm like, wow, this, I mean, but again, it opened up so many doors and so many other questions. And it's certainly not something that, you know, I could put out to the world and say, you know, this absolutely is what, you know, because I don't know. You know, it's all speculation, but it was very interesting. You know, passed out to, you know, a team of, you know, very competent, trained remote viewers, and people sending me data. You know, I had one session that I received back that, you know, this individual in the beginning stages of the session literally, you know, sketched a schematic of these huge, you know, structures of stone and everything else. I mean, he was definitely on target. And the data went on to, you know, it was really, really interesting. But, you know, again, it's, you know, interesting, fun, and everything else, but, you know, what does it mean?
Right, you can't reach conclusions, really. You can just, it's, like you said, more questions were raised.
Yeah, it's really, it, but, you know, like I say, it keeps it fun, keeps it moving, keeps you interested, and it, you know, it gives you a nice break from, you know, just mundane training sessions and things of that nature. Same thing with the, you know, something like the lottery or something like that. It's, you know, of course, the lottery can be validated, you know, you, whether you win or lose. But, you know, it's not something that you would want to, you know, go to a, you know, remote viewing training workshop for 2 or 3 days and then come out of that and immediately, you know, run into trying to remote view the lottery or, you know, work on Stonehenge or things of that nature.
Well, the, speaking of lottery, now that's the really marketable thing that I see as far as RV goes, is there have been successes remote viewing lottery, of course, by people who worked for you know, years on it and figured out techniques and things like that. So it's not like you're going to read a book and then just start doing it. But that actually has happened. I've seen the proof.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's out there. And, you know, we're starting to, I think, reach a level of people in remote viewing that I think you'll see more and more of that. And you'll see, and this is what's so fascinating and, you know, that I'm passionate about is, you know, when more people get involved with remote viewing, it seems, you know, we know already that people are able to learn to remote view so much quicker than they were 20 years ago. You know, what they can pick up in a three-day seminar now took them, you know, months and months and months and maybe years to learn 20 years ago. So people, for whatever reason, and there's all types of different theories about why this occurs, that people are picking this up so much quicker. But there's a lot of amazing talent and amazing minds working on, you know, different aspects of remote viewing, numbers being one of them, because numbers, as you guys know from prior shows, has always been an aspect of remote viewing that has always eluded everyone. You cannot, you know, and this is something that, you know, anyone that's had any type of formal remote viewing training has heard, you simply cannot remote view numbers. Can't be done. And, you know, that's something that's been drilled in our heads, you know, forever. And the reality is that it can be done. You know, it takes some innovation, and it takes a, you know, different approach and, you know, thinking outside of the box, so to speak, but it can be done. And, you know, the proof is out there, you know, whether you're looking at, you know, Aaron Donahue's, you know, groundbreaking work that he did with his PAN system, you know, or, you know, some of the other remote viewers that have gotten involved with the lottery, and I know there's, you know, quite a few others now that are doing very similar stuff, using different techniques. Absolutely, it can be done. So it's just a matter of, you know, getting more minds into the pod and you know, evolving as a skill.
Where was I going to go? Now I've forgotten. Because I glanced over at the clock, you see, and I see we only got 13 minutes left.
Yeah,
I know. Can you believe it? Did you happen to see white noise? I know this is completely off topic, but did you happen to see white noise?
No, I have not seen that yet.
Okay. Wait till it comes out on video, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've had some issues with that. But remote viewing, if you could, how long would it take nowadays then, do you think, for someone to get up to a fairly competent level? Because you were saying earlier, three months you might be able to do in a seminar. I have my own theory is that the information is out there now. I mean, when they started in, what, the 70s, it was just like this idea, oh, the Soviets must be doing it, so we have to do it kind of thing. So we're going to, like, pull these people off of their jobs fixing airplanes and, you know, whatever they were doing, and we're going to make them become psychic detectives / remote viewers. And so that's what they were doing. You know, now this is what you're doing. So I'm sure they had a lot of issues with that. But now the information's out there. It's gaining momentum and popularity. It's showing results. Remote viewing is showing results. I mean, I was floored with the last ORVP. the information is there. People see it can be done. Perhaps just that acceptance is helping, along with site, you know, websites. You can learn about it by reading through websites and books and stuff like that. So with all of that preparation done, I can see where you can go into a seminar kind of thing and do the one-on-one kind of thing with an instructor and some other students and just like really dig in and bring it all together and then suddenly achieve a level of competency that would have taken months to achieve beforehand. But how long in today's day and age with somebody who's mildly interested or perhaps even avidly interested, could someone reach a level of competency where they're actually like talking about this stuff with like you and the other people on 10,000 Roads?
Well, I mean, nowadays, I mean, you know, I have people all the time that, you know, I mean, I certainly don't put myself, you know, on a pedestal or anything like that because, you know, as I said so many times, I'm literally just a babe in the woods when it comes to, you know, my remote viewing knowledge. Yes, I've been doing it for several years, but compared to the pioneers, you know, I'm, you know, a speck of dust on a, you know, on the floor. But you know, it's hard to gauge personally. Of course, you know, it's similar to martial arts training. Well, how long will it take to get my black belt? Well, that depends on different factors, of course. You know, how diligent are you in your training? How, you know, seriously, you know, do you train? How often do you train? What's your, you know, innate ability out of the chute, so to speak? Are you more adept at practicing? You know, the old adage, you know, practice makes perfect, but really it's not practice makes perfect, but how you practice makes perfect. So perfect practice makes perfect. So if you're not practicing properly, you're actually harming yourself more than you're actually doing good. So it's very important to instill very good practice habits early on in students to get them going quicker and more proficient. So it really depends on so many different personal things. But, you know, someone going to, you know, a three-day intensive workshop and then working for, you know, a couple months on their own or staying in touch with, you know, myself or whatever instructor they work with and, you know, practicing, you know, three sessions a week for, you know, say 6 months or something, at the end of that 6 months, I mean, you're going to have some amazing remote viewers. You know, I mean, I'm not saying 6 months as, you know, a, you know, total timeline for doing something like that, but it just generally speaking, within a couple months, you know, someone that's trained properly, you can have excellent, you know, foundation of skills, just elementary skills, and ready to move on to more advanced work so much quicker than, you know, a couple decades ago where it took actually, you know, a couple years for them to get through, you know, a couple different levels of training. But, yeah, it depends on, you know, of course on the person.
Oh, yeah, so it's like any skill, playing the piano.
Yeah, playing the piano, you know, whichever, it's very similar. I mean, you can have people that, you know, in remote viewing, you'll have people that, you know, the die-off rate is very high. You know, if you have 10 people that go through remote viewing training, typically, you know, 6 or 9 months later, you might have maybe just one or two of them that are actually still actively, you know, training and doing, you know, sessions, you know, three times a week or so. Because in remote viewing, I mean, once you get the foundations, you know, the bottom line is you have to practice and you have to, it's a skill. I mean, it's not, it's work. It's very, very hard work, and you have to keep going. And you really have to, you know, stay on top and progress. You got to be doing, you know, minimum of, you know, like around three sessions a week to keep going. And if you want to get, you know, very, very good and progress quicker, then you have to do more, you know, more than that. You know, I mean, that's just to, you know, a base level. So it just depends on what you're, you know, what you want to do personally.
But pretty much everybody does. Everybody can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm convinced that, you know, everyone is able to learn remote viewing and have a certain amount of success at remote viewing. Yes, absolutely. Now, you know, that being said, there are going to be people that, for whatever reason, will, if they continue, have much better success and much higher rates of correct data and better sessions than other people. For a variety of reasons, you know, whether it's just their involvement with the training or just an innate ability. I mean, there's some I have a student locally here in Tampa that had no remote viewing formal training whatsoever, and sat down with them over a weekend and introduced them to the foundation, you know, of remote viewing and just the basic skills. Blew my socks off. I mean, this guy within a weekend was doing sessions that, you know, were so much better than my sessions after, you know, a year and a half of constant training. You know, why that is, you know, do I suck? Maybe. Did he come to the table with, you know, maybe a more innate skill? Possibly. Or is there something occurring in the evolution of human consciousness that is allowing people to access these things easier and faster? I really don't know.
Well, there is that concept of, what was it, the you know, the consciousness is opening in 2012 and stuff like that, and the
right
the whole mysticism about the upcoming end of the Mayan calendar. I have a question. This might be controversial, and you may not answer it. You spoke about Paul's book,
right?
Okay. Does he happen to remember? And did you read? You read Paul's book, right?
I've literally just gotten into the start of it, so I haven't read through all of it, no.
Oh, okay. So you may not even know the answer.
Right. Maybe not.
Does he happen to remember in that book, because this is either a yes or no question. It's not, like, controversial. It's either yes or no. Does he happen to remember a Mr. Ed Dames in this project?
Yeah.
What?
Yes, he does.
Ah, okay. Well, that's one big question solved. Because that's a huge point of controversy.
Well, as far as Ed Dames and his involvement with the military program?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who say that he may not have actually been in it, or if he was a janitor. But if Paul says he was there, I'll believe him.
He was, I've never met Paul Smith, and, you know, everything I've read and have heard about people who have met him, he's an amazing instructor, an amazing remote viewer, and he was also, from what I understand, and Mr. Smith, if I'm stepping out here, you know, I apologize if I'm, you know, saying things I shouldn't be saying, but from what I understand, he was one of the individuals that he kept incredible notes as far as what occurred and when. And he was kind of like the historian, so to speak, of the group. He was one of the individuals that really kept, you know, immaculate notes as to what went on and when and who and everything else. But his book is very enlightening. But yes, Major Dames is definitely in the book. He speaks about him quite a bit, and Major Dames is definitely was in the group, absolutely.
Well, I have a respect for Major Dames, just that he's getting, you know, remote viewing out there. He's doing the shows, and
right,
he's doing hard work, and he's put together a training and development kit and a training and development seminars all over the country, and he's really, really going after this. He's like, hey, this is working. We're getting results, and so he's doing that. But for some reason, he is a point of controversy.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's the, you know, love him, hate him relationship, most people know that I've trained, you know, personally with Major Dames. He's a wonderful, gifted instructor, an amazing instructor. I mean, he's I can't say enough about the instruction that you're able to get with Major Dames. And, you know, just a quick side note, when it comes to teaching remote viewing, by all means, if you have the ability to get trained by these ex-military viewers, get it from the source. You cannot get better training from getting it, you know, from the Major Dames, the Paul Smith, the Wimpy Cannons, the Joe McMonagles, Mel Riley, all these guys that were, you know, pioneers. Get it from the source if you can. I do. You know, whenever I go for training, I'm trying to get it from the source. But back to what we're talking about. You know, Ed Dames, very controversial. Love him, hate him. Bottom line is, Major Dames brought this out of the shadows. Whether you disagree with him or not, he really was instrumental in getting this out to the public and getting this remote viewing snowball going downhill. It really doesn't matter if you love him or hate him. It's a wonderful thing that it's here now. So, yeah, very controversial, but fantastic instructor. Lots of great materials out there, and, you know, I can't say enough good about the man.
Well, every time he goes on the radio, and every time you go on the radio, you're taking a chance. Every time I go on the radio, I'm taking a chance.
As you guys know, the remote viewing community is, you know, most everyone, if they don't know each other personally, they, you know, there's at least, you know, some type of mutual, you know, someone that knows someone that knows someone. You know, it's
right.
A very small community. You know, it's a very interesting community. But, you know, it's, sometimes it's like a soap opera. You know, I mean, there's lots of, you know, lots of drama and everything else. And, you know, I've certainly gotten involved in my fair share of that. It's unfortunate because I enjoy working with everybody, whether, it doesn't matter if, you know, I mean, I have a very hard stance when it comes to validation and remote viewing, and some people, you know, don't like my opinion, and, you know, I salute them for not, you know, agreeing with it. That's fine, and we don't have to agree. We can agree to disagree. You know, the people that I may not agree with, I still respect them as individuals, and I still respect them as remote viewers, and, you know, sometimes I know I have a hard time communicating that to some people, and it's unfortunate because I really, and I can't say this, you know, more sincerely, I really, really enjoy working with everyone I can in the remote viewing community and seeing all the different varieties of thought and perspective. I mean, it's a wonderful thing.
Well, let us hope that ORVP2 will bring some new fledgling members of the remote viewing community, and they can get in the fray with everyone else. It does happen in ghost hunting, too. There's the smallest ghost hunting groups that have just tons and tons of drama, and then there's extremely large ones with their own little waves of drama. But with that, Vance, we have to close the show.
Oh, geez.
So give a shout-out. Your website is, of course, Trinity Science.
TrinityScience.com, and for the people, I've been getting quite a bit of email lately asking about the three-day workshop. I will have the information so you can register online up there in another day or so. If you can't wait, and it's already filling up. I mean, the response has already been incredible. Email me. I mean, I'll do whatever I need to do to get people involved and make sure I'm saving slots for people that, you know, definitely can make it down here to Tampa, Florida for the initial, you know, inaugural kickoff of this. But I'll have the all that stuff up in a couple days, TrinityScience.com, and then, of course, we'll be getting back with you guys in a couple weeks here to do the, part two of the ORVP.
Excellent. This is going to be a great year. 2005 is really shaping up. Vance, thank you very much for coming on Ghostly Talk.
Well, thank you, guys. Again, it's been a pleasure.
And hang on for a second, okay? Hang on just for a little bit. And to the listeners, I have to say thank you so very, very much for listening in, because Ghostly Talk can't do it without you, you know. And our website, of course, is www.ghostlytalk.com. We're aired live on Pioneer. That's pioneer.rolo.net. We have to make way for W Paranormal coming up next on Pioneer. They, of course, are wparanormal.com. And get in the chat rooms, talk with Rob and the gang at W Paranormal, because they want to do a two-hour show as well, and they want your involvement. With that, I have to say, I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And this has been Ghostly Talk. Thanks for listening. Science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.